Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App Auka Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App Auka Navida downloaden und loslegen. Auka Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
Mit der ING läuft's einfach. Banking, das nebenbei passiert, kein Stress, kein Drama. In der ING-App regelst du deine Karten selbst. Wunschpin, Limits setzen, sperren mit einem Klick, alles direkt von dir gesteuert. Die ING macht Banking easy. Für dich, für dein Leben. Do your thing.
Hey, welcome to the Richard Serrett Show. And on today's program, a powder keg. I'll tear into an RCMP staff sergeant's outrageous, ridiculous claim on CBC that Canadians who embrace traditional values are extremists. Pure insanity. Then I'll be sitting down with Dr. Simone Gold, the fearless founder of America's Frontline Doctors. We'll dive into America Frontline Doctors' game-changing FDA petitions to free hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin for over-the-counter use. She's strongly urging Health Canada to do the same. So, expect truth bombs on free speech and medical tyranny. The Richard Serrett Show, off and running for Friday, July the 11th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. Facta, non verba.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
We must not allow ourselves to be intimidated. Our task is not only to win the battle, but to win the war.
Stop repeating we're not in Kansas anymore.
Take a look at this country through her eyes if you really want to see something. You'll see the whole parade of what man's carved out for himself after centuries of fighting.
You're out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature! And you will atone!
Seeking truth and justice in a battleground of deception and corruption, this is The Richard Serrett Show.
The Canadian state has declared war on its own people. Not with tanks or guns, but with something far more insidious. The weaponization of language and ideas to criminalize dissent. This week, RCMP Staff Sergeant Camille Habel, in a chilling interview on CBC, suggested that Canadians who embrace traditional values, those timeless pillars of family, faith, and patriotism, might be teetering on the edge of extremism. Yes, you heard that right. Let's have a listen.
Well, radicalization in general quite often will show by people isolating themselves and changing their behavior, like changing what they're saying on a subject, like becoming more extremist. Like, and if someone you know was very... believed in equal gender rights, but all of a sudden are leaning towards like traditional values. And that might be a sign that they're becoming more extremist. But we also have to remember that having the most extremist views is perfectly legal in Canada, and that it's only acting with violence to prove that view that becomes a criminal offense.
The very principles that built this nation, that gave it moral and cultural coherence for centuries, are now, in the eyes of our national police force, potential red flags for radicalization. If you've recently rediscovered the importance of a strong family unit or questioned the relentless march of progressive dogma, watch out. You might just be a terrorist in waiting. So let's unpack this for a moment, because the implications are staggering. Habel's comments weren't a slip of the tongue. They were a window into a broader, more sinister agenda. She spoke of radicalization showing up in people isolating themselves or changing their behavior, like, brace yourself, leaning towards traditional values. She gave the example of someone who once championed equal gender rights, but now dares to question that orthodoxy, suggesting this shift could signal extremism. Now, she did toss in a caveat, noting that extreme views are only illegal when paired with violence. But let's not kid ourselves. The damage is done the moment you equate traditional values with a pathway to terrorism. The message is clear. Conform to the progressive zeitgeist or you're suspect. This isn't just a random officer going off script. This is the RCMP, the storied institution tasked with upholding law and order, echoing the same tired playbook we've seen from global elites for years. Vilify the ordinary, pathologize the traditional, and silence the skeptical. It's the same script that's played out south of the border, where parents who dare question school curricula are labeled domestic terrorists. Or in the UK, where questioning immigration policy can land you in a Twitter storm or worse. But here in Canada, where politeness is practically a national sacrament, this feels like a betrayal of the highest order. The RCMP, once a symbol of national pride, is now casting a suspicious eye on the very people it's sworn to protect. People like you, who might value a stable family, a connection to faith, or a love for country over the latest social engineering experiment. So let's talk about what traditional values actually mean, because Habel and her ilk seem to think the term is some kind of dog whistle. Traditional values are the bedrock of Western civilization. They're the belief that family is the cornerstone of society, that discipline and personal responsibility outweigh fleeting feelings, that faith, whether in God or in the enduring wisdom of our ancestors, gives life meaning. These aren't radical motions. They're the glue that held society together through wars, famines, and upheavals. From the stoic resolve of the pioneers who carved out this nation to the moral clarity of those who fought against tyranny in two world wars, traditional values have been Canada's backbone. To suggest that embracing them is a step toward extremism isn't just wrong. It's a deliberate rewriting of history to shame and control. But here's where it gets darker. Habel's comments come in the context of a recent RCMP operation in Quebec where four men, two allegedly active military members, were arrested for plotting to seize land and form an anti-government militia. Serious stuff, no question. But instead of focusing on the specifics of that case, actual actions, actual plans, Habel pivots to casting a net over anyone who might be changing their views toward traditionalism. This is guilt by association on steroids. It's like saying someone who starts going to church or prioritizing family dinners is one step away from storming Parliament Hill. The leap is absurd, but it's intentional. It's a tactic to normalize surveillance, to make every Canadian second-guess their beliefs, their conversations, even their thoughts. And let's not ignore the double standard here. A former Conservative candidate, Ron Chinzer, pointed out that the RCMP seems laser-focused on so-called right-wing extremism, while giving a free pass to the chaos of left-wing radicalism. Where was this vigilance when the ECHO activists were blockading railways, or when Antifa was torching city blocks in the name of justice? The silence is deafening. Chinzer, a former sergeant himself, nailed it when he said the RCMP is framing the most basic concept of every religious group, a strong family, as a potential threat. This isn't about public safety. It's about ideology. It's about targeting one side of the cultural divide while letting the other run wild. The backlash was swift, and thank God for it. Maxime Bernier, the People's Party leader, didn't mince words, mocking the RCMP's logic and daring them to arrest him for his radical traditionalism. Canadians across the spectrum took to social media, rightly outraged that their values, values shared by millions, rooted in centuries of tradition, are being smeared as dangerous. The RCMP, sensing the heat, sent out another spokesperson, Marie-Yves Breton, to walk back Habel's remarks. Breton insisted the RCMP isn't saying traditional values make you an extremist, only that, quote, sudden changes in behavior paired with a tolerance for violence might raise flags. But this is damage control, not a retraction. The seed has been planted. Question the narrative and you're on a watch list. This isn't new. Last year, the RCMP's own environmental scan report warned that Canadians are being attracted to the far right by, get this, citizens' movements. You know, those pesky groups of regular people who dare to question government overreach or stand up for their rights. The report leaned on shaky stats from anti-hate researchers claiming more women are joining these far-right causes. The implication? If you're a mom worried about what your kids are being taught, or a dad who thinks borders matter, you're not just wrong, you're a potential threat. This is the same playbook used by every authoritarian regime in history. Redefine dissent as danger, and suddenly anyone who disagrees is an enemy of the state. Let's step back and look at the bigger picture. What Habel's comments reveal is a deeper rot in our institutions. The RCMP isn't operating in a vacuum. It's part of a broader cultural shift where the ruling class, politicians, bureaucrats, media, has decided that the values that built Canada are no longer acceptable. They've traded the rugged individualism of our pioneers for a collectivist fever dream where conformity is safety and dissent is extremism. This isn't about protecting Canadians. It's about control. It's about making you afraid to speak, to think, to believe in anything that doesn't align with the approved script. And when the National Police start equating traditional values with a slide into terrorism, you know the game has changed. History teaches us what happens when governments turn on their own. In the 20th century, regimes from Moscow to Mao's China branded traditionalists, farmers, priests, parents, as enemies of progress. The result was always the same: division, suspicion, and the erosion of trust. Now, Canada isn't there yet, but this is how it starts. When the RCMP, an institution meant to serve the people, starts policing beliefs instead of crimes, we're on a dangerous path. The question isn't whether you're an extremist, it's whether you're willing to let your country slip away while you stay silent. So what do we do? First, we call this what it is: an attack on the soul of Canada. Second, we reject the premise. Believing in family, faith, or country isn't extremism, it's sanity. It's the foundation of a free society. And third, we hold the line. Speak out, challenge the narrative, demand accountability from those who think they can redefine your values as threats. Because if we let this slide, if we let them shame us into silence, we're not just losing a debate, we're losing our country. The fight starts here, and it starts now.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
Wir alle haben diese eine Playlist, die uns runterholt, die uns mitten im Alltag durchatmen lässt. Warum sollte Saubermachen anders sein? Mit HK reinigst du nur mit dem, was dir und deiner Umwelt gut tut. Ohne aggressive Chemie. Ohne Kompromisse bei der Wirkung. Das ist der Moment, in dem du spürst, sauber geht auch anders. Mit HK. Kraftvoll, hautfreundlich, einfach richtig. Lerne den HK-Effekt kennen. Für dein Wohlbefinden und ein gutes Gefühl, das bleibt. Mehr auf hk.com.
Buckle up for a no-holds-barred conversation with a doctor who's been censored, vilified, and even jailed for challenging the medical establishment. Dr. Simone Gold, founder of America's Frontline Doctors, is taking on the FDA with a bold push to make ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine safe, time-tested drugs available over the counter. From Ottawa to Washington, D.C., she's exposing how politics, not science, is strangling your access to life-saving medicine. She's going to reveal the truth behind the war on medical freedom and what it means for you. Dr. Simone Gold is a physician, attorney, and fearless advocate for medical freedom. As the founder of America's Frontline Doctors and Gold Care, she's dedicated her life to restoring trust between doctors and patients, free from government overreach and Big Pharma's grip. During the COVID-19 crisis, she courageously challenged lockdowns and championed repurposed drugs like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, earning her both a massive following and the wrath of the establishment, censored by big tech, smeared by the media, and imprisoned after speaking at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, Dr. Gold endured selective persecution, detailed in her new book, Selective Persecution. Yet she emerged stronger, filing two citizen petitions with the FDA on June 26th to make ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine over-the-counter in the U.S. Her fight exposes a chilling reality in both the U.S. and Canada, where these drugs remain prescription only under Health Canada's tight control. Political agendas are blocking access to affordable, Nobel Prize-winning treatments. Dr. Gold stands as a beacon for those demanding health sovereignty and truth in medicine. Dr. Simone Gold, welcome back to the program. How are you?
How are you today? Thank you, Richard, for inviting me back.
My pleasure. Give us some more details on the petition, if you could.
Yes, this is a big deal. So America's Frontline Doctors, when we first were launched in the summer of 2020, one of the things I became very famous, well-known for saying, was an expression, give it to the people, meaning give the prescription drugs to the people. We have drugs by prescription only in America and in Canada that are over-the-counter in much of the world, specifically hydroxychloroquine, also ivermectin. It is over-the-counter most of the world because they're very, very, very safe. They're held back in America because there hadn't been any market demand to make it over-the-counter, right? If it sat on the shelf in the pharmacy and nobody was going to buy it, there is no pharmaceutical manufacturing company that really wants to go down that road. In other nations where malaria is a problem, right, then it's over-the-counter because people buy it. That is the only reason it wasn't over-the-counter in Western nations. That's it. There was no safety reason. There just wasn't a market demand for it. Then we saw during 2020 that there was a huge market demand for it. Physicians were had mostly drunk the Kool-Aid and weren't prescribing it, but some were. But if patients got their hands on a prescription and they went to a pharmacy, the pharmacy chains mostly would not fill the prescription, which, by the way, in America is completely illegal. I don't know in Canada, but in America, the division of labor between the physician diagnosing and treating and the pharmacist dispensing is black and white. It is a bright line. So we saw a lot of illegality. So we tried to make it over the counter in the pandemic, and the FDA turned us down. So I said, new administration, new times, more data. We know it's safe. We know it's effective for COVID and also lots of other things. And I said, let's bring it back. So we filed a 10-page petition, I think 10 or 12 pages for the hydroxychloroquine, about 10 pages for ivermectin, outlining the science and outlining why this is something that Americans, Canadians, people should have available to them, just like they do across the third world.
Part of the reason, or maybe the main driving reason, that it wasn't allowed to be over-the-counter during COVID was because had it been in wide use, these early treatments would have prevented the emergency use of the vaccine. Is that not correct?
That's exactly correct. Factually, they could not release the vaccine on the rapid path that they did if there was another treatment that worked. That's why there was so much hatred poured on hydroxychloroquine, because the rule to allow an EUA or emergency use authorization for an untested modality such as the COVID shot requires sensibly that there's nothing else that's around that works. So that is a precondition of releasing things on an emergency basis, which makes sense. So they had to pour a lot of hatred on it. Putting COVID aside, though, our drug normally has to go through a process to convert from prescription to over-the-counter. However, we've done this many, many times in America. Naproxen comes to mind. Naproxen used to only be prescription. Now it's over-the-counter everywhere. Aleve, as an example, there are really about 100 drugs that have switched status. So, and it can happen that usually the pharmaceutical company likes to switch its status, but you can have a citizen group look to do it. The most well-known example, actually, ironically, is Plan B. No pharmaceutical company wanted to do that, but the Plan B, the early abortifacin or late, you know, contraceptive, whatever you want to call it, was brought forward by a citizen petition. So it's a modality that's been done, that's tested, that is available to the FDA. And we're just reminding the FDA, let's do this.
So again, the FDA's restrictions have nothing to do with science. It's all politically motivated.
Well, I just want to be careful. I don't want to overstate it. No pharmaceutical company had ever requested for it to be over the counter. The first time it was requested was by America's Frontline Doctors during the pandemic, and it was too political and they turned it down, and it was totally politics. but there had never been a pharmaceutical manufacturer that asked for it. There still isn't, because there isn't a profit motive. There's not a lot, there's no money really to be made on generic hydroxy or generic ivermectin, but there is an urgent need for people to get their hands on it. That's the proper use of a citizen petition, to recognize when there's no parent, shall we say, no corporate owner that wants to bring it forward, but it would be useful for the people. That's the proper use of the citizen's petition. And now they have it on their desk at the FDA. And I don't know what will happen. It's a new administration, but you know, Big Pharma runs the federal government. I've said that for many years. So we hope for the best.
Here in Canada, our health agency, Health Canada, they've warned against ivermectin for COVID-19. They're actually citing risks like seizures. How do you respond to their safety concern, given the drug's long history?
Right. So I'm not one to usually talk with hyperbole, but that's disgusting. Okay. I never talk like that. So one of my motivations for doing this is when I learned some of how it operates in Canada, I was absolutely horrified. And in comparison, we're much luckier in America than you are in Canada. I found out, correct me if I'm wrong, that if your doctor sees you in Canada and doesn't allow something, then really nowhere in Canada can you get it. I had no idea it was quite so centralized, but I had friends who got prescriptions or they got a COVID diagnosis and then they were not allowed to buy hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin because the whole nation kind of operated under one power diem, which is unbelievably scary. And it makes this requirement to make it over the counter five times more important for Canadians than for Americans. At least in America, you could go to different doctors, different pharmacies, if you really were motivated. But in Canada, my understanding is you're kind of locked in. And if it was over the counter for you, you could bypass the pharmacist, you could bypass the doctors, you could bypass the government.
Canadian doctors like Dr. Charles Hoff faced discipline for prescribing ivermectin. How does this reflect the same censorship you experienced in the U.S.?
Very much so. I specifically was targeted for disinformation and I had to fight to retain my physician's license. I won. It took $250,000 of hard costs, not counting my time and a lot of other expenses, and 3 years. But I had a very solid case. I'm a lawyer as well, and I know how to argue, and I had great lawyers working for us on this, so we won. But there were many doctors who were silenced. If you watch America's Frontline Doctors over the next 2 weeks or so, we're going to be putting out a lot of examples of doctors like Dr. Hoff, like myself, who had to fight the cabal, essentially, the medical cabal, to keep their medical licenses. And I want to implore everybody, doctors went to school for a long time. This is their livelihood. There's kids, there's mortgages. This is really unbelievable to take away a doctor's livelihood based on professional opinion disagreement. It's very dangerous stuff.
So the FDA, of course, mocked ivermectin as horse paste. I'm not sure how familiar you are with what happened up here, but to your mind, was Health Canada's similar stance part of a coordinated effort to discredit these drugs between the FDA and Health Canada? Were they working together?
I have no inside information on that, but I do know the world in general copies what the FDA does. So I have no doubt that there was collusion behind the scenes to ensure the hatred poured on hydroxy and ivermectin to propel the shots to the market. Do I know what Health Canada officials said to the FDA? I don't, but they were also really all on the same page. If Big Pharma is running the United States federal government, I have no doubt it's also influential in Health Canada.
Let's imagine for a moment that ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine were available over the counter early in the pandemic. How might outcomes have differed in Canada and the U.S.? Have changed? How would it have been different?
Right. So I'm going to say unequivocally, at least 75% of the deaths attributed to COVID-19 would not have had to happen. How do I know this? You simply have to look at nations where this stuff was over the counter. One of the best examples to look at was actually in the nation of India. There's a state called Uttar Pradesh that has a population the size of the United States of America. Uttar Pradesh is, I think, 300, 350 million people, just like America. So in the middle of COVID, they were kind of like following like America and Canada, and they really weren't releasing these drugs. But then they're watching the data and they said, this is nuts. And in Uttar Pradesh, they were very loose on the ivermectin, kind of in the middle. So their numbers plummeted right? The only thing that really changed was they gave their people access to ivermectin. Nations that had early access to hydroxychloroquine, this is another example, like in Africa, where in April of 2020, the New York Times said it was going to be like a killing field and death all over. Instead, Africans had about 1% of the death rate per capita that America had. So America was the worst. You could take a nation like India, which kind of switched in the middle. They were about 10%. And nations like many nations like on the continent of Africa, with the exception of South Africa, had death rates about 1%. All nations that had loose access to hydroxychloroquine, which was really the more common one to be able to get, had death rates that were about 1% of America.
You've been called a political prisoner. How does your experience in the U.S. parallel the silencing of Canadian doctors questioning Health Canada's policies?
It's the same. I think it's almost worse in Canada. There's some diversity in America with states. So for example, a doctor who's being targeted has an opportunity at least to have a license in a different state. In my case, for example, I moved from California to Florida. But my understanding of Canada is it's really kind of, it's so centralized, the control, that you don't really have that flexibility. So the independent doctors that I know in Canada don't actually practice medicine. They'll give advice, they will explain, they will educate, they will teach, which is mostly what a doctor should be doing anyway, but they're not going to bother with getting silenced and censored and lose their livelihoods over the government. And I've encouraged many of them to do that. I said, you don't actually have to practice medicine. Let some other licensed doctor practice medicine. If you're an independent, truth-seeking doctor that's smart, that's awake, that's read the science, people will pay you for your advice. And that's the lane that you should be in, like a coach or an advisor. And the smartest, in my opinion, the smartest Canadian doctors have done that. They've stepped away from the government control.
Health Canada claims no clinical trials support ivermectin for COVID-19. Do you think their evaluation process is transparent, or is it swayed by external pressures?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say to that. That's a complete lie, completely false, totally untrue. I invite all of your viewers, listeners, readers to go to C19IVM, C19IVM, I think it's .org, and you will see hundreds of studies that show that ivermectin helped. I don't know what to say to that. That is so outrageous. I didn't know that's what they said. There's nothing to say to that. That's pure garbage.
We had a federal health minister rise in the House of Commons during question period, during COVID, and dismissed vitamin D as a conspiracy.
Yeah. So that's another one. I just have to say something about that. So the majority of people who were very sick with COVID, the ones who landed in the ICU, had low vitamin D levels. That was an absolute fact. They went after naturopathic doctors in America who were recommending vitamins to their patients. I don't know what more proof people need of the tyranny, right? If they're coming after you for talking about vitamins, for taking vitamins, I mean, this is tyranny. I was shocked when I learned about this, especially because the science was clear. About 80% of the patients in the ICU for COVID had low vitamin D levels. In other words, it was a predisposition, serious risk factor for getting very ill with COVID.
Up here, I mean, you can't get HCQ without a prescription, even for things like lupus or arthritis. I mean, how does this restriction harm chronic illness sufferers aside from COVID?
Well, so that's interesting. So in America, presumably in Canada, the use of hydroxychloroquine was traditionally for lupus and rheumatoid arthritis. So the reason there was no market demand to just sell it in the pharmacies was because those patients typically do comply with regular doctor visits. So you go to your doctor, you're getting your lupus checked or your rheumatoid arthritis checked, and they write you a prescription and there you go. And they probably didn't even think twice about the fact they couldn't just buy it off the shelf. So at least in America, you were not restricted if you had those diseases. They tried to fearmonger a little bit. They tried to say there was going to be a shortage in 2020 and that the lupus and the RA patients couldn't get it. It was another lie. We had hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of extra doses stockpiled. It was kind of a weird position to be in because the government was saying it's not safe to take for 5 days, but it's safe to take for decades. That was actually what the government said on a single piece of paper. It was Mind blowing. That's why I won against the California Medical Board. That is literally like what they said. They said you could continue to prescribe it for RA patients or lupus patients, which we all know could take it for decades. That could be elderly, could be frail, could be immune compromised, but you couldn't prescribe it for 5 days for a healthy young, an otherwise healthy young person. It was.
Yeah, the logic is staggering, isn't it?
Yeah.
Any thoughts on what legal or constitutional tools we could use up here to challenge Health Canada's grip on drug access, as inspired by your FDA petitions?
Right. So first of all, there's a chance that Canada will follow what America does. If, you know, there are four states, there four, I think, right now in America that have made hydroxychloroquine over the counter. I'm sorry, ivermectin over the counter. And certainly if the FDA makes it over the counter here, Health Canada is going to notice that. Certainly you could travel to America. You go to Buffalo and you get yourself some. You could, right? Mm-hmm. I think, though, for the moment, because this might take a year for the FDA to rule on it, you don't know, I would advise Canadians to find a doctor or someone smart, someone outside the system. It could be a physician assistant or a nurse practitioner, a naturopath, somebody that they know is wise. And I would pay that person privately for their opinion. And if that opinion makes sense to you and you research it and it makes sense, then you find another way, another prescriber to do it. And I have to mention Gold Care because this is the solution. This is the solution. And all Canadians should come and join it immediately. It's very inexpensive. It's $10 a month. And that's exactly what we do for the, you know, we give you all this information. It's all included. And then if you want to make an appointment with an advisor who will teach you, who will tutor you, who will pay attention to you, you'll get all the information you need. And if you learn you need something, where there's a will, there's a way. I met lots of Canadians whose doctors restricted them, but when they knew what they needed, they found a way. So it's a two-part problem, right, Richard? What do I need? What's the answer? What's the advice? Like, how can I find someone smart who's truth-telling? And number two, if I need something, where do I get it? So I've solved that in America with Gold Care, but I've solved your first part for people all over the world, which is what's the truth.
All right, so how do we access Gold Care? How do we find out more?
It's so easy, goldcare.com. It takes less than a minute to sign up. It's really inexpensive. It's $10. And in fact, I will always sponsor you, your listeners, 1 month for free because I want everyone to try it. So it could be goldcare.com/Dr. Gold. And then you try it, there's zero risk. And it's only, you know, you look around the site and you see if it makes sense to you. There's hundreds of lectures. There's hundreds of doctors. Oh, and I almost forgot. Oh my goodness gracious. The month of July, in honor of July 4th, Independence Day in America, we're doing all the doctor visits for half off, which is essentially our cost. And we're doing that because we want everyone to know what it feels like to experience a doctor who listens to you and who's unbiased. We feel so strongly in the mission of what we're doing. So goldcare.com/Dr. Gold. You get a trial month and all doctor visits for the month of July are half off, which is our cost.
What else can patients and doctors do to join your fight for medical freedom? Perhaps, I don't know, through some sort of a cross-border coalition with American Frontline Doctors?
First of all, everyone should contact us at America's Frontline Doctors. We want all supporters. We keep people incredibly apprised. We fight various medical freedom issues at the United States Supreme Court. As you saw, we filed a citizen's petition. We do have many Canadian subscribers. It's a nonprofit, so it's free and it's filled with amazing information. We need donations, of course, because we're a nonprofit. But jump into the fight, do something. I do get frustrated when people don't do anything. They think some other guy will do it. No. We are hardworking volunteers. We're doing it and we welcome your support. And in exchange, we're going to give you a ton of information. We have certainly worked with many Canadians over the years, for sure.
And if the FDA does grant your petitions, how likely is it that that will pressure Health Canada to loosen restrictions, or is our system too entrenched?
No. I think it's very likely. I think it's very likely. I think it's very likely that Canada will move in lockstep with America on this issue. There's just the ship has almost sailed on the negative political. People understand it differently. They know they were harmed. You guys kicked out Justin Trudeau. Not that I think the new guy's better so much, but
right.
People really understood that they were harmed. And they remember what freedom is like. I mean, as you know, Canadians are very polite, very nice people, and we urge you to be a little bit more feisty. And certainly if the FDA changes our status, there need to be advocates in Canada that advocate for the same thing, but it'll be a much easier fight if the FDA does it first.
What's the end game here with these petitions and where you're heading with this? I mean, are you trying to dismantle, or would you like to dismantle, the FDA and Health Canada's authority over generic drugs entirely?
So if I could wave a magic wand, I'd try to walk the middle line. I think that the FDA should exist for safety studies. I think they're pretty corrupt. I think they're regulatory capture. I think it's pretty obvious. You read Bobby Kennedy's books, you can't deny it. However, you could reduce a lot of the harm if you remove them entirely out of, you know, does it work? Is it effective? Now, let me just like walk people through this. We always hear the term safe and effective, and people kind of conflate the two. They're not at all the same. I would like our government, if they're well-intentioned, to look at safety for us. I mean, it is better to have, you know, educated people who know the subject who could say, yeah, you know what, at least if it's over the, you know, it's on the shelves, you know, it's not cyanide. I mean, I'm in favor of that. I don't think we've gotten to such an anarchy place that we should get rid of that. But safety is totally different than effectiveness. It happens that hydroxychloroquine was very effective for early COVID, but I don't care. It's very safe. Let the people decide. That's how we do it in free societies. You have people who try things, and if it works, then more people jump on board. And if it doesn't work, people don't jump on board. Let the people figure it out like they do with other consumer goods. That's my vision for the FDA. I have no idea if we can get there or not. Bobby Kennedy certainly has his hands full, and not everybody in the administration would agree with what I've just said to you. For me, this is obvious.
Selective Persecution, just released about a month ago, just over a month ago. How do we get a copy, Dr. Gold?
Please, this was a labor of love that I wrote for everybody. This is what I went through when I was targeted by a tyrannical government. You know, America was really going into a dark place. And I was an invited guest speaker on January 6th. A lot of people don't know that aspect of it, that I literally had a permit to be on the Capitol grounds. I was due to speak with at least four other Congress people, Paul Gosar, Lauren Boebert, Marjorie Taylor Greene, a bunch, right? Anyway, the day, of course, didn't go as planned. And what happened to me by my own government as a result of that is utterly shocking. I endured a violent FBI SWAT team raid, broke down my door, handcuffed, shackled, you know, the big guns with the laser sight beams pointed at my chest. They sent me to prison. I actually went to prison. It's remarkable, right? And it was a maximum prison. It wasn't a minimum camp. It was quite an experience. Now, I also review how this all started. Like, where did we get all this propaganda and disinformation? If you're interested in what Fauci has done all throughout his career to contribute to tyranny, it's all there. It was very important to me to write a book that had a lot of references, what I call the receipts, a lot of receipts. There's hundreds and hundreds of references in here to prove everything that I've said. And I urge people to buy it for different reasons. If you want like the craziest story that's a page turner, we've got it. If you want a historical record of what we endured the last 4 years, starting with the COVID lies and then what J6 revealed, you've got it there too. And if you just want to keep like the proof in your hand because it might disappear off the internet, you've got it. So I urge people to buy it. You'll enjoy it. Selective Persecution on Amazon.
That's one of the great ironies of the story is you weren't even at the Capitol to talk about the election, correct?
Right. That is one of the great ironies of the story and how my government persecuted me. Wasn't talking about the election.
Very quickly, last question. Do you see public confidence in public health being restored anytime soon?
I'm going to give you an unusual answer. I do not, and I hope it never is. So the epilogue on my book, Selective Persecution, the book, it really goes through a lot of legal things that happened. I mean, we have a lot of medicine in there too, with Fauci and everything we went through with the tests and, you know, the treatments, but a lot of it is legal. But the epilogue is written by Dr. Robert Malone, and he has a phenomenal piece in there about the origins of public health. They're essentially what's called the yellow beret. They kind of derive from draft dodgers, very kind of socialist, communist throughout their culture. It's fascinating. I am not a fan of public health officers. I wish it didn't exist. And I know that's a dramatic statement, but that is absolutely my opinion.
Dr. Gold, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Again, give us the details on how Canadians can access Gold Care and also more on American Frontline Doctors.
Yes, I invite every single citizen of Canada to immediately join goldcare.com. It'll never be a better bargain than it is right now. You guys need information. You are not being told the truth most of the time by your own doctors. Your doctors are absolutely working for your government. They need to be working for you. Please, goldcare.com. It's open to Canadians. And please consider joining America's Frontline Doctors, AFLDS, it's a mouthful, AFLDS.org, to find out more about a lot of medical freedom issues. Oh, and Selective Persecution on Amazon.
Fantastic. Thank you, Dr. Gold. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
All right, that's it for me. I'll speak to you again real soon. In the meantime, I remain unbowed, unbent, unbroken.